Tonight, we'll hear from six candidates running for three open Haynes Borough Assembly seats. The top two vote-getters will serve three-year terms, and the candidate with the third most votes will fill the seat recently vacated by Katie Rothbart for the remaining year of her term. Joining us tonight is Ben Altmoore, Eric Hawley, Margaret Jones, Bill Jurowitz, Jerry Lapp, and Gabe Thomas. To debate and discuss some of the most pressing issues facing Haynes Borough residents today, the role as elected official, and the future of Haynes. Before we begin, just a few housekeeping issues. The election is Tuesday, October 4th, beginning at 7 a.m., with early voting beginning next week, Monday the 19th, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Borough Administration Building. If you have any questions about your ballot or early voting, please contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-766-6402. And a disclaimer, the views shared tonight do not necessarily reflect the viewpoint of Lynn Canal Broadcasting, the Board of Directors, staff, or Chilkat Valley News. Next, Kyle Clayton will explain the debate format.
Okay, thanks for agreeing to participate tonight in this debate. Last year was the first time we tried to hold a debate rather than a forum, and we're excited to try to do the same this year. With the help of Max and Brandon, we've come up with five resolutions and a format we hope will generate interesting discussion and debate. We think these resolutions have been expressed in one form or another in meetings or in public discourse, coffee shops, etc. Last year, we sent the candidates the resolutions in advance. This year, we've just sent topics. Please stay on topic, anticipate what an opponent's argument might be, and be ready to respond to points you agree or disagree with. The debate format tonight will be as follows. Each candidate will have up to 2 minutes to introduce themselves. Following introductions, we'll provide a brief introduction to the topic for listeners and for the candidates, and then state a resolution. And then each candidate will have up to 90 seconds to respond to that resolution, whether they agree, disagree, somewhere in the middle. You may refer to other candidates' statements in your initial response to the resolution. Following the initial response time, there will be a 9-minute period for candidates to debate among each other or further discuss the resolution. The person who responds to the resolution first gets to respond first during that 9-minute period. And we'll go in order from where Jerry is first and down the line to who responds first, second, third. And then at the end, after we've stated the resolutions, we'll have time for listener and audience questions. And that won't be a debate. That'll just be like a forum. Audience members can address questions to specific candidates or to all of them, and then you'll have some time to respond. Does that make sense? Does anyone have any questions? Okay, we'll start with the first one. We'll start with our introductions first. So, Jerry, go ahead and please begin.
Okay, is that on? Okay, my name is Jerry Lapp, and I'm a resident of Haynes for 45 years. My wife and I had a business out at 33 Mile for 35 years. We raised our family here. Our kids graduated from this high school. Haynes has been home to us for that period of time, and it's been a place that we have enjoyed, and we have always managed to make a living here. Haynes is, I've seen it through its ups and downs and its many trials, but I guess the reason I want to be on the assembly is because I want to help keep our community a stable community. I notice now that in the wintertime, it seems like we're losing more and more people. Seems like it's not a lot of activity in the wintertime, and I like to see that change. So, thank you.
As most of you know, some of you don't, my name is Gabe Thomas. I'm sixth generation, born and raised Chilkat, Kluckwan, Tlingit. Sorry, a little bitter. nerves here again. I don't know why, but I born and raised here, moved back 8 years ago, and decided to get involved in politics here in Haines because it's a generational thing. My great-grandmother, Mildred Sparks, she was four generations ago. She's helped start ANS, Alaska Native Sisterhood. My grandmother, Margaret, she was involved in the American Legion. And as most of you know, my father served multiple things in Haines between assembly, representative, and all the other things in between. But I'm drawn to it because this is my home. I decided to move back with my family and establish a home. And just it feels right to be here. And I feel like I need to represent my community the best I can and represent the whole community and not just certain sectors of it. So when I decided to run the first time, I felt like my sector wasn't being represented. And that being the middle-aged people with children in school, in the working class, it seems now that we're still in that situation. I'm currently the only assembly person right now on the assembly that has children in school, and currently I believe the only one with a job. So there's that. So vote for me would be, you know, continue what I've been doing. I've been pretty steady. I've served through the pandemic. I've served through the disaster in Haines. And I feel like my leadership was really strong during that, and I would like to continue that.
I'd like to say hello to everyone here, and hello to those listening to KHNS. I'm Bill Jurewitz, Dr. Bill Jurewitz, otherwise used to be known as Dr. J. 6 years ago, Julie and I moved here to Haines. We live in the Mosquito Lake area, where we're active in the community up there. I am retired now, and I want to give my time and efforts to help Haines continue to be a wonderful place to live. However, now I'm not going to start the however yet, but there's so many wonderful things here. There's a natural beauty of the valley, a great school system with dedicated teachers and staff, award-winning library, hunting, fishing, and skiing, heli-skiing, apparently. It's a great place. It's a great place. There's so many things. However, there has been a loss in confidence in the borough assembly. Many people feel that the borough assembly proceedings have not been transparent, especially as regards the LUTAC doc. So we need a change on the assembly. We need new voices, voices committed to being open and transparent. I am running to be one of those voices. And I hope that you will vote for me.
Excuse me. I'm Eric Holly. I grew up in a place that I like to call the land of the Burning River. It's a place called Cleveland, and people used the river there as an industrial sewer, and it got to the point where it actually burst into flames several times as I was just getting out of high school. I lived in Colorado 20 years after that, where I made a living as a musician, and I had a tree trimming business there. First came to Southeast Alaska in about 1978 and explored most of Southeast Alaska by foot, by kayak. Worked a few jobs here and there, but mostly it was just getting to know the place, the people. I really fell in love with the small town atmosphere and the people that I met, as well as the countryside. Finally moved up here with my wife, Katie, in 1989. And since that time, I've been the president of Lynn Canal Conservation off and on for 20 years and vice president, I think, the rest of that time. I like the outdoor life, hunting, fishing, skiing, all that kind of thing, outdoor ping pong, music, gardening. And I just want to say, Bill mentioned emotions running high around certain issues. My feeling is that anybody who is involved with the borough assembly is just trying to do their best, put the needs of the community forward, and there's no ulterior motives involved. Thanks.
Hi, friends and family and neighbors of Haines, both here and listening in. My name is Margaret Jones, and I was raised in Haines as a third-generation local and graduated from high school here. Before I left and spent 10 winters traveling and attending school and working, all the while returning home in the summers. I believe my optimism and communication skills and problem-solving abilities can be an asset to our community and to the assembly. I have a young mind full of innovative ideas, hesitant to choose old ways of doing things just because it's the way they've been done. But I also know the importance of respecting traditions and systems put in place through centuries of lived experience. Approaching change carefully and with a clarity necessarily informed by the knowledge and understanding of those who came before. I love this community because it gave me roots and a place to call home, and because here we are forced to truly see one another, to know the histories and family lives of our neighbors, to choose the person over their politics. It reminds us that no one can be ruled out or disregarded as unimportant. My Haines family and friends and neighbors are fishermen, seniors, kids, guides, bartenders, pastors, conservationists, Trump supporters, and Bernie bros. These are the people and perspectives I would like to represent. Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight, the excitement expressed over my decision to run this year and support I've received, and the chance to earn your vote for Borough Assembly.
Hi, my name is Ben Altman Moore. And I've been a resident of Haines for 6 years. I was originally introduced to the Chilkat Valley as a guide. I came up here as a guide, worked out at Glacier Point in tourism, spent some time as a charter fisherman, and like so many people, I just fell in love with the abundance of the land and the waters here and the generosity of this incredibly welcoming community, and two, the concentration of artists and craftsmen and just really incredibly skilled people who live here. I apprenticed as a carpenter in 2017, and then I bought land and started building a house in 2019 and started my own business 2 years ago. I'm running for assembly now as a voice for young people, for business people and entrepreneurs and families. And I'm just interested in being more involved in the future of a community that I love very much. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Well, we'll get started. The first topic. Last October, a former assembly member suggested that the assembly should enact a temporary sales tax exemption on groceries. Supporters said a sales tax on groceries is regressive and that the exemption would help low-income residents and families. Opponents worried that the borough couldn't afford the loss of revenue. Ultimately, no action was taken on the issue. Your resolution is groceries should be exempt from sales tax. Jerry.
Do I just give you just a regular statement or the reasons?
Whatever your feelings on the
okay.
issue is.
Okay. I don't disagree with the statement. I think it's worth looking at. But there are several things that we have to consider. And the one thing that was brought up there was the loss of revenue. And according to our sales on sales tax, if we took off the tax for groceries, we would lose 15% of the sales tax revenue, which would amount to about $550,000. And a hit that big to the budget of the borough, you would have to look around for other sources of revenue to cover that. Either that or you're going to have to start cutting some services, because that's a fairly large hit to the budget. And so, and one thing that you could look at to replace that is maybe another seasonal tax that you collect more in the summertime than in the winter. So that's my take. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, Gabe.
That resolution sounds very familiar, considering I think I helped draft that. I totally support the idea of this seasonal sales tax and switching from the groceries, getting groceries exempted, but I also wanted to include heating fuel. As most of us know, that people that are here year-round, heating fuel and groceries towards the winter start getting pretty expensive, and they start taxing on people that are maybe struggling a little more. And we do see a lot more seasonal people leaving, which is why I was also in agreement with Jerry about adding it to a seasonal and adding a 1% to the summer to help capitalize off not only the tourism, but even the people that are just here for the few months out of the year and leave us here to shovel ourselves out and deal with this stuff, you know. The maintenance doesn't stop. Things don't stop just because they leave town. We still have to keep going as a community, and it costs money. The 1%, if we added it during the summer, I believe we thought might have covered maybe almost 400,000. I think it's 350,000. Would almost offset that 15%. So I'm a total believer of that resolution.
Well, excuse me. I think we're all so far in agreement. I would like to see the grocery tax certainly be removed if possible. The borough does need revenue. There's no doubt about that. But there might be other ways to make that revenue up. Right now, there's a 2% tax on tobacco and marijuana. If we raise that to 3%, which I don't think would stop anybody from smoking or eating brownies, that would raise about $70,000 more a year in tax revenue. There's also the bed tax, the transit lodging tax here, which is really low for this area. It's 4%. If we look at other venues, Idaho is 8%, Washington is 6.5%, Hawaii is 10.25%, Washington, D.C. is 15%. If we merely raise that 4% to 6%, that would give us approximately another $90,000 of revenue. Now, that may not make up all the difference, but we certainly can make up the difference by not counting all groceries as tax-free. We could use WIC, Women's, Infants, and Children's definition of groceries, or SNAP's definition of groceries, to remove the taxes on those. And I think we might be able to get to the point where we'll be helping many people in this community.
Okay, thanks. Eric?
I think you gave us a softball to start with, really. I agree that we should help out lower-income people by removing the tax. I think adding fuel in there, heating fuel, makes sense, but the question I would have would be, does that include other heat sources, firewood and things like that, because not everybody uses heating fuel. I agree with Bill about looking at using the bed tax to make up some of the deficit. But I did just say head tax, and that is something that has been debated back and forth, and I think that's worth re-examining as well. And that's about all I have to say about it. Basically in favor. We just need to find a way to do it.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Margaret.
I think it's interesting that in last year's debate, one of the questions was about whether the borough should raise or create new taxes to make up for lack of funding for infrastructure improvements. And while I think that we should certainly do what we can to help those who are struggling to pay for groceries and low-income members of our community, I think that it's important to look at all of the options and what other programs might exist that we could help connect those people to that already exist to help people who are low-income to pay for their groceries. And also with heating, just to to think about how complicated these issues really can get when you start to mess with the tax code, and when you start to think about even just a tax break, like Eric was saying, on heating fuel, does that cover other ways that people choose to heat their homes, and would there be help for those people as well? So looking at the origin of the idea and why it was created as a solution, what problem was it created as a solution to, and how might we meet that problem without messing with the tax code, and complicating how grocery stores run their business and then how restaurants run their business and how that's connected and what all of the implications of changing the tax code are, that we might be able to come up with a similar solution to the same issue without going that route.
Okay, thank you. Ben?
I think that especially in the current national inflation cycle, it would be potentially advantageous for the Haynesboro to have, if it can afford it, an exemption on grocery tax, which, as Bill was saying, could be templated from SNAP. We wouldn't have to reinvent the wheel on what was defined as food. I also wanted to point out that having tax on food, at least at the sales tax level, is nationally very unusual. There's only 7 states in the country that do that. And there's only 3 states out of those 7 states with tax rates at or above 5.5%. So currently in Haynes, not only do we have one of the most expensive groceries you can buy anywhere in the country, we also have one of the highest tax rates. So I think exemption or lowering tax, if the Haynesboro can afford it, through increasing other taxes, I think an exemption on a grocery tax could really help out our most vulnerable population.
Thank you. Jerry, is there anything you'd like to add after hearing this discussion?
Just that I'm not a real big fan of taxes. In fact, I'm probably the one that's held my foot tightest when it comes to budget time with the borough. And I think what we really need to do is look around for more revenue resources. The wintertime is when folks really hurt the most, and that's when the grocery tax would help a lot, getting rid of the grocery tax. So what we need to do is find ways to create year-round revenue in Haynes, and that would alleviate some of the tax burden on the folks here right now.
General agreement. Is there anything anyone wants to add or address any other candidate statements? Gabe?
There's a couple of things that were stated. First of all, when we did talk about heating fuel, we did include all sources of, we were thinking about all sources of heating. The bed tax we discussed, but it was disproportionate, as we have Excursion, who is one of the major contributors to the bed tax, would benefit nothing from us increasing the bed tax. So we had thrown ideas around about how could we help Excursion if we raise the bed tax, because they're basically paying tax for nothing. The grocery stuff, like people had said, it's very minimal. We had talked to not only Mr. Olger but Mr. Ward, and they said it was as simple as switching over their system. It's already all pre-programmed. It's already done. So, but I do agree with Jerry. The new taxes were also discussed, and gas tax was one of them, and I know people don't like to hear that, but the main reason we were thinking about moving these taxes around were for infrastructure and roads. And I know my voters won't like me for it, but I still think a gas tax is something that we could have done and we probably should have done prior to this inflation period.
Okay, Bill, you had your hand raised.
Well, none of us like taxes. Unfortunately, we don't live in a magical world. We need revenue from somewhere, and taxes is where the borough gets it from. I'd like to mentioned, Margaret brought up restaurants. That food would still be, that's a form of, basically a form of entertainment. That would still be taxed under the way I would view that. And the terminals, as Gabe's mentioned, they're already set up to go. They can be changed very easily. And I'm not opposed to having a seasonal adjustment. That makes a lot of sense with the tourists that come in, and especially the RV people that come in and buy groceries here and stuff. They may as well leave a little money.
Okay, does anyone else have anything to add or want to respond to the other candidates with? Jerry, go ahead.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would just like to say it's an old saying that I heard a long time ago, and I still believe it to be true, and it is, you can't tax yourself into prosperity. So. just leave you with that.
Okay, if there's nothing else, we will move on. Okay, number two. The community has faced problems related to solid waste, including illegal dumping, high disposal costs, and until recently, limited landfill hours. At a recent borough committee meeting, the idea of mandated collection was briefly discussed. No action was taken, though. So the resolution is the borough should mandate garbage collection. And Gabe, we'll start with you on this.
This one, gosh, this one's a tough one. Of course, again, another one I was involved in heavily. I spent a few years with the Solid Waste Working Group working on trying to figure out some of the illegal dumping and garbage issues throughout town. I do partially agree with this mandate of collections. The problem I have with mandating collections is we have a private enterprise that currently runs the dump, and having government step in and say that people have to do that and we have to use this facility is something I'm not really fond of. And I don't think government, I know governments, that's what we're supposed to do, you know, that we're supposed to handle our solid waste, but we don't own that dump. So it's hard for me to mandate that, but I think that the day is coming, and while I'm here, I'm probably sure I'm going to see it, because the garbage is not stopping, the prices are not dropping, and people are still illegally dumping. So we're going to have to do something.
Okay, thank you. Bill?
As far as solid waste goes and having it mandated, I don't think I can wrap my head around that. Currently, I would first like to say that the new management at Community Waste Services, I think, has done a commendable job. It looks much different there when you go up now. It's much more organized, less trashy. We did have a solid waste management working group, and why it disbanded, I guess Gabe probably knows why it disbanded. I'm not clear on why it disbanded. It apparently was not able to reach any positive ways to do things. We're not going to be able in this large of a borough and this not densely populated, very sparsely populated parts of the borough, have door-to-door collection like you have in the lower 48. There are some things the borough might look into. One would be to have central transfer stations on a scheduled basis. The borough could somehow identify parcels of land for use where Community Waste Service on that particular day could come out and collect the trash from people who live nearby. We're already doing that up in Mosquito Lake, and I'm running out of time, but I have to say the Mosquito Lake trash collection is working very well.
Thank you. Eric?
I don't support a mandate, mandating pickup, primarily because there is a problem with people, garbage, and bears coming into town. I don't think the bear-proof containers are adequate. I'm not talking about dumpsters. I'm talking about containers that would be needed outside of people's houses. There have been significantly, there's been quite a lot of bear incidents recently, and I think we need to do something about that. I believe CWS is doing a pretty good job. There's not a lot of leachate coming out of the dump anymore. The prepaid bag program makes sense, although I wonder if there's a way to incentivize that and make it easier for people that are low income. I also think that there's an issue of individual responsibility, and I think education would help with this. But the old three R's, reduce, reuse, and recycle, a lot of stuff gets thrown out here that should be saved and passed around, sold in rummage sales, sold in secondhand stores. Tech Chinook is coming up with a compost recycling facility. So those are a couple options to educate people with.
Okay, Margaret.
I agree that there are other options to consider before considering a mandated trash pickup for many of the reasons, the obstacles that we would face with a trash pickup mandate being, like Eric said, the bare problem with the containers, the issue of in the wintertime getting the containers to a place where a truck can pick them up. And I think that any time that there is an issue like this where we're considering stepping into the private sector, where the private sector has been historically responsible for taking care of solid waste in our community, and I think that the borough could play more of a role in that or a different role than it does now. But it seems to me that as things are transitioning with CWS, they're attempting to respond to the needs of the community and to the issues and to the concerns that people have with how trash is being taken care of right now, and that our current system does provide a certain level of individual responsibility, and you see exactly the effect of not separating your trash or the weight of your trash in your bags, and you have to take personal responsibility and take it to the dump, and that maybe we could partner with Community Waste Solutions in a different way to help educate the community about their practices and systems, and then help them stay informed about the concerns of the community and needs in the community.
Thanks. Ben?
I also would not support a mandatory buy-in for a number of reasons. I think, you know, one, most folks can't afford another bill or a higher tax levy to pay for something like that, which would undoubtedly be expensive. And then I think another reason that I wouldn't support it is that in many ways, a mandatory trash pickup would actually de-incentivize reducing, reusing, and recycling, because if you've already paid for something, you know, why not just use it? And that being the mandatory trash pickup, I think a lot of people would just end up throwing things away that they otherwise might have, you know, brought to the recycling center or found another use for. I think also, you know, that would probably end up increasing the volume of trash that's going to the landfill, which in the end would shorten the life of the dump, which nobody really wants to see.
Gabe, do you want to respond? Jerry, I'm sorry. Jerry's turn. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Mandatory garbage collection. Well, the first part of that, the first word, I'm totally opposed to. I don't like to mandate things that we don't have to. If anything, the borough's role in the garbage collection should be to set up a transfer station, make a contract with Community Waste Solutions to pick it out of that transfer station. But in those transfer stations, you could have it similar to what Fairbanks does. And that's where you could bring items that you don't want, and they had a covered building, and you leave them there. If they aren't taken out of there within so many days, they go into the trash. But you have the transfer stations, and up there it's free, and I haven't found yet how they pay for that. They have lots of charges. But I think we need to do something like that. What you're seeing around town now is people putting stuff all over at the end of their driveways and putting free on it. And it's scattered, so it's starting to look kind of actually junky around town. I'd rather see it in one place in a transfer station than anywhere else. So that's just my thoughts.
Definitely have a few rebuttals for this one. So as far as the working group committee, we disbanded it because they were tasked originally with trying to figure out transfer stations. And it started with transfer stations for months, if not almost a year, maybe a year and a half, and then it deviated into some other things that I can't even remember, which is why at that point we decided, okay, this is not going where we wanted to. Excuse me. When we had talked to CWS about transfer stations, I believe the number off the top of my head, and I'm fairly good with math, was $1.25 million for us to set up a transfer station in town. That was with it being manned, so people weren't just throwing mixed garbage in. And community, or the solid waste working group, that was why they deviated away from that idea so much, as they were worried about mixed garbage. We couldn't get them to get past that and trying to figure out how do we
do the transfer stations, and do we have to have a man? Could we have them separated? You know, we talked with CWS about what the doctor here is saying about Mosquito Lake. He says they don't make money on that. So for them not to make money is not going to work for a business if we try to do it throughout the community. Eventually, the government's going to have to step in, is what we ended up finding out with these transfer stations. We would have to flip the bill. We can't expect CWS to eat $1.5 million or $1.2 million.
Would anybody like to respond, or go ahead?
Well, if the borough, or the residents of the borough, are concerned about this problem, then perhaps there's going to have to be some increased pay to accomplish these things. It seems to me the transfer station's not a bad idea. Right now, in order to comply and to bring all your trash into the landfill, you have a few hours, 3 days a week. For a lot of people, it's a very long drive. It's not a comfortable drive on your auto suspension. And I just think that we need to investigate the options of transfer stations. And I also would like to add that I believe we're the only borough in Southeast that does not have some government involvement in their solid waste disposal. If I'm wrong, someone can tell me I'm wrong. But on the other hand, I don't think solid waste disposal is something that the borough should take over. I think private enterprise is structured to do a much more efficient and better job at this.
Jerry, go ahead.
Yeah, just I really hadn't looked into this till just lately here, and it does say in our charter that we have the power of solid waste management. It's in charter on section 12. But so that gives us the power. We could help out. We could make a contract with Community Waste Solutions. We could install transfer stations, and we could collect fees for garbage. So that's something that the borough can do that needs to be looked at seriously, because there's still a lot of trash going into the woods out there because the costs are getting so high at the dump. People are doing other things. I visibly have watched someone out the road dump trash in off the bridge going over the Klahini. And when I approached them, they said, oh, it was just food scraps. Well, it doesn't matter. Enough food scraps go in there. It's going to pollute down here. So,
Eric, go ahead.
I think the challenge really is to make it easy for people to access different areas where it's convenient for them to do waste disposal. One of the problems with recycling is certain products have to go to one place, and you know the dump will take aluminum, and Friends of Recycling takes a lot of things, but they don't have a way to deal with glass. So I think if there were a transfer station, if it were set up with clear recycling bins, that would make things a lot easier in the long run. And again, I think some education to reduce the amount of trash that comes into the waste stream. Particularly talking to store owners to like try to reduce the products that they put on the shelves that are mostly packaging and not really a necessary item. Okay, that's it.
Go ahead, Margaret.
Yeah, Gabe's comments just reminded me that this issue has a long history in Haines, and that a lot of work has been done to try to solve this issue. And other comments reminded me that we don't have to reinvent the wheel here, and that if we're one of the only cities or towns in Southeast or otherwise that doesn't have some borough involvement in the private solid waste collection, then there are lots of examples we can look at. There's lots we can learn from what is already the efforts that have already gone into solving this issue and connecting the people who are currently having to make decisions about it with the people who have already done a lot of work to learn about the history of the issue. And the different options we might have, I think, is really important.
I was just going to add one thing that I think I was remembering from when we had this discussion about Fairbanks, I think with Jerry. I believe we looked into it, and I think it was their sales, their property tax was included some sort of percentage in it for solid waste disposal. The other thing I was going to add is I believe most of these candidates are right, though, with the collection sites or the collection fees being cheaper now. You can get home collection for $80, I believe, for one can a week, versus if you go up there with a truckload of stuff and it's $120. I think if we let CWS do their plan and let it play out, I think you're going to see more people do the collection stuff. But it does have its problems with the bears in the winter, as was pointed out. But there's things we can do. I think we need to let CWS as a private people try and work some of that out first. And then we've been trying for 19 years, but we still got to let them try. They just started getting it cleaned up the last 3 years.
Just one other thing. While I was glancing through information and stuff, I found out that the solid waste group did come out with a booklet, and I think it lives at the borough office there, that gives you ideas on how to reduce your trash and what you can recycle and stuff. So it's a good document to be looking at.
Okay, Bill.
Yeah, I would agree with Jerry. I mean, some education on reducing and recycling and especially reusing would be helpful. There's no way to enforce this, unfortunately. So we have to depend on the good intentions of our citizens here in the borough, and education would help, I think. So that's all I want to say.
Okay, we'll wrap up unless anybody has anything else they want to say. All right, we'll move on to the third resolution. Come budget time, services such as the pool, Chilcat Center Museum, or the Mosquito Lake Community Center are often described as either essential services the government ought to support or as extras that, while nice, fall outside essential government services. The resolution is the Assembly has the responsibility to consistently fund services such as the pool, Chilcat Center, and or museum. And we'll start with Bill on this.
I want to make sure I'm writing down the right answer so I answer the right question here to get the right answer. actually, the only public service that the borough is required, and they are required to fund, is the public school system. Everything else is optional, basically. And surprisingly enough, they can't administer the library even. That's Department of Education. That's a state function. I would agree, and I would like to see that there are a number of items that should always be funded. The senior living facility, medical services such as the ambulance, the EMS, the fire department. Certainly we're not required to have a police department, but that's pretty important. And the pool. The pool should not be on the chopping block every year.
Okay, Eric.
I actually think that the borough should try to direct some money towards library, museum, swimming pool, things that enhance the quality of life here. And the reason that I say that is that one of the three pillars of the economy here, in addition to tourism and fishing, is what's called location-neutral businesses, which is either retired people or businesses that can use the internet or other means to function just as well in Alaska as they could in Texas or Oklahoma. I would like to see the borough fund a number of other things equally. Training programs for year-round employment opportunities. Jobs like electricians, plumbers, welders, also home health care workers. I'd like to see them incentivize small farm food production security, small business startups, pilot programs for enhanced hydropower. And I think we should cap the police budget, and especially for emergency response outside of the town site.
Okay, thank you. Margaret?
Yeah, thanks. I think that this is a tricky question because the borough has a specific mandate, and there are things that the borough is required to fund or has a history of funding. And I think all of us as community members can agree that part of what makes our community vibrant and an exciting place to live are our public services, are our incredible public library and our pool and Mosquito Lake Community Center. And I think that before the borough considers ending the precedent of providing funding for these public services, that it would be unwise to transition without being heavily involved in the transition process and finding a solution that allows public services to continue serving the community, similar to the way that the museum has transitioned from needing as much borough support as it once did. And I think there are lots of options to consider. But ultimately, we have to look at what are we required to fund, what essential services do we currently provide the community that would harm the health and safety of our residents if they weren't continued, and then what else can we do, and try to do as much of what some people would consider extra as we can, because it's really the heart of our community and what makes us who we are as a people.
Thank you. Ben?
Yeah, I think that there shouldn't necessarily be a mandate on what the borough absolutely has to fund in terms of, I think the list that was stated was the pool, the Chilkat Center, and the museum. But I think that, of course, as everybody mentioned, there's such a pillar of why people live here that it's really a matter of quality of life. And I think it's really there's a high potential for when you winnow away the budget that that supports some of these services, that you could really be kind of chiseling at a nerve in terms of why people live here. As was mentioned before, the three real economic drivers of the economy in Haines are tourism, fishing, and location-neutral professionals and retirees. So I really think the budget priorities should reflect the supporting and protecting of those priorities. And I think that, as much as we can, the pool, the Chilkat Center, and the museum should be supported.
Thank you. Jerry?
Yeah, that's interesting. At budget time, this usually comes around, but I don't support making that a mandate that you have to fund those issue or those three places, because when you do your budget, well, it's a manager's budget to start with, and the manager's working with the money that the borough has, and so they go through and they make it, and then they present it to the assembly. Well, the assembly's got usually what they do, they prioritize. You prioritize what is essential for the borough. And so you put your monies towards that first. You save the money. And education is one that's what the borough was formed around, was to fund education. And so after that, you start looking. You want your public safety to be one of your priorities, because that's your police, your fire, and your ambulance, and you're obligated when you take your oath that you're going to protect the citizens of this borough. And then after that, you work down. And as long as I can remember, and I was mayor in a third-class borough, we have never failed to fund any of those, even if it had to be at a lower rate. We still funded them.
Just to be clear, I think I've heard two people use the word mandate, but the resolution said responsibility too. But anyway, go ahead, Gabe.
Responsibility to fund those is at certain levels, I would believe. You know, when we have money available, we can fund those more substantially. During 2021 or 2020 budget, we were substantially low because of COVID, and we couldn't fund those certain things at certain levels. Could we do them better? Maybe if we do continue increasing our revenues. One of the things I'm hearing up here is location neutral and hydropower. I'm going to hit those. For some reason, I don't know how those include in this topic, but location neutral to me is exactly why we're having the problem in Haynes with housing and the housing shortage. We're having people, and I'm not saying that I disagree or agree with them showing up. What I'm saying is that they're putting pressure on the community. They show up, they buy a house for cash, $500,000, no ifs, ands, or buts. They can make their payments. All while they're making somebody like, let's say myself, who has a job working out the highway or working somewhere in town, $20, $25 an hour, I can't price myself into a house now. This is why I believe you're seeing in the borough all these vacant jobs for the borough. They're too low a paying. Nobody can live here for 20 bucks an hour. It's just, it's what's happening. I hate to use the word gentrified, but that's what's happening. As far as power, we could use hydropower, would open up this whole community for massive amounts of. You could do production. You can increase the cruise ship power. Anyway, power is our biggest hiccup in this community, I believe.
Okay, we will address housing at a later question, so we can talk more about that. But does anyone want to respond to what's been said so far? Go ahead, Bill.
I'd like to just point out a few things that. Over half the income, I'm not talking about half the borough's income, half the tax income. I'm talking about half the income that comes into the borough. Comes from retirees and from whatever this term location neutral business and income is. And that money gets spent here. That money gets spent in stores. It gets spent doing tourism items. It gets spent on seaplane, flying in and out. I certainly am sympathetic to the plight that we have with the housing. But I know we're going to talk about housing later. For the young people and for people that work here and have jobs, if the borough can do anything, and I think there are things the borough can do to enhance the possibilities of better jobs, housing availability, affordable housing. I think there's a number of things that can be looked at. And to have a healthy community, you can't just have retirees. You have to have young people. You have to have people that are working. This borough needs to be for everybody. And the borough certainly needs to pay attention to that.
Go ahead, Eric.
There's at least a couple of advantages I see to, for lack of a better word, location neutral people living here. We were talking about funding the library, the museum, the pool. Those people are probably the most likely to have disposable income to help support those things, so that it doesn't have to be a burden on lower-income people. Secondly, there are also the people that are perhaps most likely to keep skilled laborers employed and at a good rate. Their houses are probably well-built, but everybody needs maintenance done, and they may be willing to pay a fair wage for electricians or plumbers or roofers, somebody to weld the railing outside their house back together, things like that. So I don't think we should disparage any of those main three economic groups within the community. That's all.
Bill, go ahead.
Yeah, Gabe brought up hydropower, and that's a very interesting concept. I don't know where our Niagara Falls is located. Maybe John Floreski knows where it's located. But one thing we do have here, and as somebody who has spent many years sailing, not for recreation but for delivering boats, we have huge tides here. An interesting, unique, very creative thing that could be done would be generating electricity from our tidal currents. That's never been looked at, and I think that's something that could be looked at.
Go ahead, Gabe.
I was going to say it has been looked at, and the only places that we found in the canal that would work were over by Tysanky, and it was because it's narrow enough and consistent enough movement. Well, then you ruin the ability to go inside the Tysanky Harbor. Hydropower, everybody in this room knows which one would work for this community. It's Conley Lake, and it was shot down prior for years and years and years ago because they said salmon habitat was going to hurt salmon. But the last time I looked, that lake's pretty high up, and the water has raised quite a few degrees since that argument. So I think we need to revisit Conley Lake, and maybe we don't revisit it with AP&T. We revisit it with maybe CIA and the borough or somebody so we can help lower the cost of living in this community and be able to create production and maybe have manufacturing again.
Does anyone want to respond to anything that's been said?
Well, I would respond to that, but it seems like we're getting a little far off topic.
Yes.
But
I think that's okay. It's generating interesting discussion, so go ahead.
I think there's sort of a safer way to increase hydro potential, and that is to use surplus power when we have it to pump water uphill to holding station, wherever that might be found to be secure and safe. And then that in itself can then generate electricity as it comes downhill when the original source is too dry to provide that kind of power. And there are prototypes for that. Igiagig has something similar to that. And also that electricity can then be used more efficiently to use heat pumps, which require a good cheap source of electricity to be economical and efficient.
Jerry.
Yeah, I just want to kind of get back to the budget. And I think that one thing that we could do so that we can fund these things, and I'll go back to one of the other items, and that is let's find revenue. Let's find some jobs here, year-round revenue. Not just the part-time that we have now, but the year-round revenue. And we would have the money to fund all these things and fund it fully.
Okay, if no one has anything else to say, we'll move on.
Kyle, real quick, we have our FCC requirement for our station ID. Thanks for tuning in to KHNS, Haines, Skagway, and Klukwan. If you are just tuning in this evening, we are entering the second hour of our debate of the Haines candidate forum debate. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll turn back over to Kyle Clayton for the Chilkat Valley News.
Okay, here's the next topic in resolution. Having secured a $20 million federal grant last year, the borough is on track to rebuild the LUTAC dock. But exactly what the dock will look like and how it will be used are still up in the air. One potential use or export has generated considerable speculation and discussion in the community. Your resolution is the LUTAC dock should be used to export ore from Canadian mines or a potential mine at the Palmer Project. And I think we're on Eric to start.
I don't support that resolution. Have to give a little background first. I support steady state economies, and I don't support boom and bust cycles that we often see with extractive resource industries, such as mining and large-scale industrial clear-cut logging. Now, I think a lot of people around the community are still under the assumption that we need the LUTAC dock for our freight. We do not. We have the RORO that AML built, and we have a 30-year lease to use that. It's perfectly safe and secure. It's what most other communities around Southeast have, and there's no reason to build a redundant facility to that. So, yes, I think there's a very strong push from within the borough administration to have ore docks, have an ore dock, and if you listen to the recording from the Ports and Harbors Committee, you hear that very clearly spelled out, that it's all about an ore dock.
Okay, Margaret.
I think that it is pretty early to be having a discussion about whether or not ore should be moved over that dock. I think that it's been well established by engineers and scientists and by the guys who work on the dock and our harbor master that the dock does need to be rebuilt and that it is not a sturdy, stable piece of infrastructure that we can count on for the next 50 years. And we have the funding to pursue the design-build concept that's being talked about right now, which would be an opportunity for us to gain back the land, the amount of space that we've lost on the dock due to safety concerns, and to utilize that property that we have out there. I think that we have an opportunity with with being connected by road to the interior and the lower 48 and the rest of the world, as well as by port to the rest of Southeast Alaska, and we have an opportunity to contribute to the regional development in Southeast Alaska, and that building or not rebuilding a LUTAC dock, which needs to be rebuilt for safety concerns, because we are out of a place of fear that maybe one day in the future ore might be transported over that dock, I think is a mistake.
Ben.
Yeah, I would not support that resolution, particularly in the state that we're in right now, which is, I don't think there's been nearly enough public input for such a consequential piece of infrastructure. I think there needs to be more opportunities for the public to be educated informally in a setting where an assembly vote is not about to be made. I think the LUTAC Dock Working Group idea should be revisited. That was promptly shot down. And I also think the public should be included as a stakeholder, because in the original charter, the public was not included as a stakeholder. It was just industrial interests. And so I think that really before we can support or not support such a drastic resolution, multiple informal town halls must be had, and like I mentioned, where questions can be fielded and clarified, and where nothing is voted on, so that there can be informed public comments before a vote is made.
Thanks. Jerry.
Could you repeat the resolution?
Sure. The LUTAC dock should be used to export ore from Canadian mines or a potential mine at the Palmer project.
Did you say should or could?
Should.
Should. Okay. I have to agree with Margaret. I think it's a little bit earlier to talk about shipping ore over the dock at this time. When they decided this dock had outlived, that it's life span was up, and it had already been braced up once in 2003, and the dock was built in 1953. And that dock is a multi-use facility, and that's what I've always in my mind had. And I was really saddened to hear this misinformation go out there to the community, and oh, we got to rally the troops because this is what's going to happen. That was misinformation. And I have always been sincere in supporting the dock that it's a multi-use facility. There'll be logs go over it at times. There's gravel that goes over it all the time. There's oil that goes over it all the time. And there's dynamite that goes over all the time. And this dock, according to the report, if you go read that report, this dock could fail. If they're out there with a fuel barge fueling up right on the face of that dock and that implodes or you have an earthquake, that would take that barge out and it could kill someone and we'd have a big disaster. So we need to fix it, and we need to fix it now.
Gabe.
I'm hearing everybody going both directions on this. As far as I'm concerned, it already is being used for ore. I currently work for an open pit mine at 4.5 mile, and we ship, I guess we call it commodities instead of ore. But would I support it? Not in its current shape and not in its current design even. We don't even have an idea of what they would want to transfer or what they would put over or how we would environmentally protect it, what kind of systems we would use. There's way too many questions. And to get the cart ahead of the horse like that was very detrimental to a project that we have to be remindful that this dock does not only support Haines. Haines does not only get what it needs from the Ro-Ro. We're connected to a road. Three ports in Southeast are connected to a road system. We support Kensington, Greens Creek, Anchorage, Juneau, Tok. All these places get things through Haines. And to be as narrow-minded and say that the Ro-Ro is the only thing that we need, yeah, that's not good. We got funded because we did prove to the U.S., to the feds, that we are part of the system and we are contributing to the whole area. Not only Haines, not only Alaska in general, but also the Yukon, and we do have impacts, and we are useful for that. As of right now, it's already had 50 years of resources being transferred across that. It's already got a track history. Keeping the face the same isn't going to hurt. It ain't going to make it any different.
Okay, Bill.
yes, the... as far as should it be used for large amounts of ore, I think that was the implied message. No, I don't believe it should. And when you said it was speculative, you're right. It's speculative that would ever happen. Currently, AML and Delta Western use the dock. We get weekly deliveries. Delta Western can deliver their petroleum. Certainly the dock's old, and I don't have the data. Apparently people have sit on the borough assembly already have such data that the dock needs a rebuild, and that is very likely true. But do we need a Taj Mahal dock? Do we need this large of a dock? It seems that we should be looking at something that could just support what we actually need and what we use it for right now. Gabe's pointed out some of these things, and we all know we need AML, otherwise we don't get groceries. And we need the Delta Western to be able to use it. As far as other people using it and the state wanting it, you know, are these other people, are they going to come in and pay for it? Right now we're put up $2.5 million. We think we're committed to spend $2.5 million of our own money.
Okay, Jerry.
We're spending $2.5 million of our own money, and that money is from funds that dock has made. That was a savings account for the dock. The dock is an enterprise fund, and it was designed when it was made into an enterprise fund to make itself a savings account and do its maintenance. But it needs help this time from the state and the feds to get it fixed up. So,
Gabe.
One of the things that concerns me if we were to backpedal and stop trying to do anything beyond what we were already discussing is what kind of message that sends to the state and other community or other funding sources. When we're trying to get a public safety building, we're trying to finish the harbor, we're trying to finish all these different infrastructure projects, and we just got $25 million and we want to say, oh, let's make a paper airplane out of it. I think that sends a bad message to the feds. I think it sends a bad message for anybody that wants to help the community of Haines or anybody that wants to invest in Haines. And that being said, I think LUTAC Doc, if you build it, they will come, such an area, maybe not. But if you build it, we have it. And we have it available for if things do show up. We are seeing more users. Like I said prior, I don't believe our 4.5 mile pit had used that place until recently. It just started using that dock. It was using an area before that was using landing crafts. So this is kind of a new thing. And I don't know if anybody's seen the size of equipment we have that moves that material. It is big. And if that stuff was to go with that material on there, we're not going to find the people. We need to consider the safety of everybody that's out there, AML and Delta Western, as Jerry pointed out. And we don't need to be hamstringing our community by just putting it through a little Ro-Ro. The Ro-Ro is good for groceries, but it's not good for everything else that already comes through here. There's a lot that comes through here.
Bill?
Yeah, I'd like to address both Jerry and Gabe. I stand corrected, Jerry, if the $2.5 million that we're talking about is from a sinking fund that already existed. That still doesn't mean we should build a huge dock. We should build what we need. And as far as having lots of transport to the dock, I would tell Gabe to be careful what you wish for. All that transport has to come down the highway, as you know. All that transport has to go right through town, very close to schools. That transport has to go through neighborhoods. And yes, the state can have us do it. That's true. But I don't think that's what we want for Haines.
Okay. I'm going to let Eric go and then Margaret.
I'll respond to a few different points that were made. One was, I think it was Gabe said something about what is the message that we're sending to the feds. Well, I agree. We have to be very careful about what that message is. But when I was looking through the benefit cost analysis, which is an essential part of the RAISE grant, I found on page 15 that it said, without federal grant funding, in the event of dock closure, barge goods would need to be trucked into Haines at a significantly higher financial and environmental cost. That's not true. We get the barged goods, we get the freight over the Ro-Ro. That kind of language doesn't look good to the feds. We need to be very careful. Now, then the borough goes on to say a couple pages later that the borough was able to close the dock because AML had recently completed installing a new Ro-Ro. That allowed LUTAC Dock to transition cargo operations to the ramp. Then they change one page later. They say that dock closure is causing a shift to truck freight that would cause dock closure causing a shift to truck freight would significantly increase transportation costs, which would be passed on to the end consumers through higher-priced goods. That hasn't happened. The dock's been closed since 2020. And that is simply erroneous information, and that's not going to look good to federal funding agencies. Now, as far as having the cart before the horse, I think that phrase has been bandied about quite a bit in this issue. To me, spending $310,000 in what seems like a very hurried process for not even a design, but just a concept of a design, that seems to be getting the cart before the horse. We need to have the town halls that Ben was talking about before spending this money, whosever money it is. That kind of proceeding is how we ended up with the harbor project that we have now. We got a steel wall, and we got a 4-acre asphalt parking lot, and no slips were added to the harbor, as was the original intention. Is it too early to be talking about shipping ore across the dock. Read the transcript from the Ports and Harbors Committee meeting March 24th. We already are talking about it. In fact, it's been talked about for at least 6 or 7 years. Go back to the R&M report that went to Manager Brad Ryan. Appendix number E is all about transporting ore from the Constantine mine across the dock. So we are talking about it.
Margaret.
Thanks. Throughout the history of the issue, it's my understanding that there's been lots of public input in this process and that there's been lots of opportunity for public input, whether it's been communicated properly or whether people have been involved in the process. But it's astounding to me how much confusion there still is over this issue, even just reading through the letters that were submitted about the dock at the last assembly meeting and then listening to the contractor explain what the contract was actually about and the differences between the understanding that the public had about what was happening versus what was actually happening or what the intention of the meeting was. So I think that Ben's right. I think that we've attempted education before, whether we've tried to help help people understand why we need a dock and what exactly is happening with this contract, why it's happening in this way, why $300,000 needs to be spent for a preliminary plan that may or may not happen. I'm certainly not an expert in that exact process and would like more information, and I think that the community could benefit from more information. And regardless of whether we've tried that or not, there is still misunderstanding, there's still confusion, people are still, like, those letters just spoke of this fear that people have over something that they find really important and that they feel is being threatened, and that's an important thing to see in our community members and to pay attention to and try to help solve, even if it doesn't make sense to us or does make sense or we've already tried. I think that it's important to stick with it and really try to bring people into understanding and into alignment with what we're trying to do.
Ben?
Yeah, I think that I just want to respond to a couple of things. I think one of the reasons that there's this public confusion that Margaret was alluding to is because there's been a bit of a moving target as far as what is being presented with the LUTAC doc, and I know some of that is because we are in the conceptual phases, but some of these changes have been presented very close to when a vote is about to happen. I'm not saying there's any sort of like nefarious intent going on there. I'm just saying that produces confusion. For example, the bundling of phases 1 through 3 pretty soon before that vote happened this spring. And then again, before the vote was going to happen, which didn't in the most recent assembly meeting, the dock tour unveiled a potential new plan that Turnagain was discussing. Before they were going to be awarded a potential $300,000+ contract. So I just think that insofar as the public support for the dock rebuild that was granted in 2016 predates the construction of the roll-on, roll-off. There needs to be, as I've said, town meetings and the question of whether the public wants a dock rebuild with the potential of ore export needs to be fundamentally revisited.
I'm going to let Gabe go.
The last thing for me on this one, and there's actually three things for it. One of them, the railroad has already failed once right after it was built, and thankfully we had equipment out there staged. It just showed up to be going the highway, and they were able to use our equipment and fix it. Second of all, I keep hearing, we don't need the face, we don't need the face. We've had that face before, and we use it more than just for groceries, and I don't know how to explain that to people that don't go out there. I worked it there for 3 years, and I've watched numerous things get transferred across that face that could not go across the railroad. They're just too heavy, too big, too long, too awkward. As far as the other stuff, I don't want to address too many of these kind of accusations because it gets me aggravated to think that we're acting agronious or whatever the word people are using right now about what's going on with LUTAC Duck, because it hasn't been that way.
I was at the meeting when they discussed the third phase, and that's the first time I heard it as an assembly person. So it wasn't something that was sprung to, you know, we didn't know about it behind everybody's back. I found out the same time everybody else did that was out there. Hence, they had the tour. Hence, people should have went out there that were interested in this and show up to those kind of things instead of just taking information from a third wheel. Go and do it yourself. Go do your own research. Go look. Stop listening to everybody else's hearsay. Go do it yourself.
Bill.
Now, would you indulge me and read the statement one more time?
The resolution is the LUTAC dock should be used to export ore from Canadian mines or a potential mine at the Palmer Project.
I just have one question. If that, I would like to direct us both to Margaret and Jerry. If that question was to be voted on by the Borough Assembly, would you abstain from that vote since you're employees of the Palmer Mine?
And it's a direct
conflict of interest.
Go ahead, Gary.
I was just going to say, I think we need to tone that kind of conversation down because we could say there's a direct conflict of interest with three LCC members sitting up here trying to go.
There's not three LCC members.
Two LCC members and one on the assembly currently. I think we need to tone. I think we're going in the wrong direction if I'm just being personally honest.
I just wanted an answer, that's all.
Candidates can abstain from answering that question if they so choose.
I'll address it. I think it's an important question, and I think that I don't know exactly what the actual law states about when there is a direct conflict of interest and whether an assembly member has a direct conflict of interest and can vote on a topic. I'm not sure if this would count, but I can say that I care more about the community and things that are good for the community than I do about my own personal job, and I would sooner, like, I don't see it as a conflict of interest because if it doesn't benefit the community, then it's not something that I would benefit on anyway just because it benefits my employer. It assumes that I can't be objective and that I can't have a strong opinion about something that doesn't align with the opinion of my employer, or, like, it feels unfair to me because you're making an assumption about who I am as an individual based on where I work when there has been no discussion with me personally about what my thoughts on this topic are. And I think it's a shame, and I think that we shouldn't make assumptions or judgments about somebody based on a lack of information and maybe even misinformation. And I think that I would like to speak for myself instead of assumptions being made about what I believe based on my employment.
Jerry.
Yeah, in the past, and this was during heli skiing, and we had 33 mile, I would run into that all the time. Well, we finally got a lawyer's opinion on it. And I would declare that, yes, they do business at our place, but they are not forced to do business at our place. They could go anywhere and do business. We didn't have any contracts with them, said, come here. Okay, right now, the Palmer Project, it's an exploration project. They are not a mining company. They're not mining. They're not going to haul ore down here. That might be 10 years from now. You never know. But if I was sitting on the assembly and working for them at the time, I would ask the assembly if I did have a conflict of interest. I've always done that in the past. So it's nothing new to me.
Okay.
Just one thing for that. When you're in these meetings and you are on the assembly and you're at the dais, you declare prior to these decisions or even before these questions are raised, and it's up to the clerk and the mayor to decide if you have a conflict of interest. They're the ones who are going to understand the code. They're going to understand the direct link that you might or might not have. I've had to declare it every time Southeast Road Builders is named or mentioned, and it's almost in every assembly packet lately. And so far, I think I've only found, they only determined one or two times that I had to abstain.
Okay, we are gonna wrap this up. We already went over time on this resolution, but it's obviously very important to people. Okay, the final resolution before we go to the audience. Borough officials have expressed concerns about a housing problem in Haines, but exactly what's causing it and how to fix it are points of contention. So the resolution is, the Assembly should take stronger actions to make housing more accessible, such as limiting short-term rentals or subsidizing new housing developments. And I believe we're on Margaret to open up this resolution.
Yeah, I think that there's lots of options of things we could do to help what the quote-unquote housing crisis in town. I think that shelter is essential and that people need to be taken care of and feel like they have a place and that it's not exorbitantly expensive or doesn't require, you know, like a nine-month lease so that they can't have consistent year-round housing. And again, it's not something we have to reinvent the wheel on. Lots and lots of communities are experiencing housing shortages right now. And I think that it's really important to think about who exactly is experiencing the housing shortage, who it's affecting most seriously, and what I think that both of those ideas are like subsidizing development so that developers have incentives to create new housing options can be looked at. And there are lots of other ideas that communities have put forward that have been helping solve this issue for them. And so I think that it's not something that the borough should turn away from. I think that we have already made progress in addressing this issue and have been having discussions about things like short-term rentals and Airbnb limits and that we should continue that process.
Ben?
Yeah, I think I would support some of the suggestions listed in the resolution, largely because I think Haines stands to benefit enormously from creating more low and middle-income housing. As Margaret said, this is a problem that is happening concurrently with a lot of our neighboring towns. And so because of that, I think there's really there's a potentially huge windfall of new residents and workers that are looking to move to the region and are finding no affordable or available housing at all. So I think this is not just a problem for seasonal workers. You know, this is a problem that nurses and teachers and young entrepreneurs and other vital members of the community are finding themselves in continuously unstable housing situation. So I think, you know, some of the things that were mentioned in the, what's it called, the housing working group that is in existence now, such as the Mount Riley subdivision, I think that's a great idea. And I also think that, you know, even though it might be a bit of a tired issue at this point, I think we should revisit the yurt ban. I'm not sure why we're limiting anybody's ability to live here at this point.
Jerry.
Could you repeat the question again?
Sure. The Assembly should take stronger actions to make housing more accessible, such as limiting short-term rentals or subsidizing new housing developments.
Subsidizing housing developments. I think I can't agree with that, so I kind of disagree with it. I think you should take a look at the short-term rentals or vacation rentals, because that is taking away a lot of the rental space here in Haines. But I think you should look at it, see the number you have, and see if it's fit for the community, because I know other communities have looked at this issue, and I've never heard any of the outcomes from it, if there are other ones that are limiting or not. So I don't know if we would want to start a trend of limiting them. I guess that doesn't sound good to me, but I think we should work with developers like that are building subdivision stuff, make it as easy as possible for them to develop it. And we should keep the relief on taxes on folks that are building houses. Right now, if you're building, you're only taxed on the first $5,000, and after that, you get relief on it. So that's some of the ways we can help reduce the housing shortage by encouraging more building. And it creates jobs here, too. So,
Gabe.
Well, you keep hitting these topics if we're seem to be current. We are discussing at the assembly right now. My belief is that I do support Haynes Development's tax incentives that we're talking about doing with the 10 years. And Roger came to us and asked, well, maybe 10 years might not be long enough. Maybe I need 15, but I say 10 years is a good start. As far as is it borough, should the borough help them sell the properties? I think there's a ways that we could do it. You know, and I can't remember what community it was in Alaska, but I remember a Fill the Schools initiative. And I'm drawing a blank as to what town it was or where it was at, but Phil's a school initiative was trying to get people like we're like the working, the middle ground people and try and get them incentivized to be able to come here, live into an area and move into an area, develop and build and have kids in school because that's what we need in Haynes right now. Our school budget's going down. We need more kids to bring the budget back up. As far as more housing, I don't know why we haven't looked into partnering with somebody like Dusty Trails. We need another apartment complex of some sort, and maybe the borough can donate the land or get involved in it in some way to be able to provide an area to put in multiple housing units. We haven't seemed to have that discussion, and nor has anybody brought it up to us, to my knowledge as of right now, that they could do something like that. And I'm not sure if we've even discussed multiple housing units such as apartment complex or condos or anything either.
Okay, Bill.
yeah, affordable housing is a major problem here. Talking with Roy Getchell about trying to hire teachers and other staff members into the school system, and housing is always a big issue for recruitment. I imagine the same is a problem for the search people, bringing in nurses and other professional people. We also have a large tourist part-time employment sector that needs housing. I would like to see the borough investigate certain things, certainly working with the developers to make it easier to develop property, perhaps tax abeyance like some method where you could make it stretch out what is owed. Also, donating land is a good idea if there's parcels to be donated. Also, creative ways to looking for rezoning if rezoning is necessary for modular and manufactured housing. Modular and manufactured housing might be a solution for a less expensive construction.
Okay, Eric.
I think the situation is pretty dire, actually, and the lack of affordable housing for all income brackets is kind of like a bottleneck, or look at it, you know, it's keeping potential new ideas and new people and new talents from coming to town or staying in town. So I'd like to see the borough get involved in it, not necessarily by dumping a lot of money into it, but using the authority of the borough to look at other creative ways to come about this, both through private enterprise and through the public sector. For example, I read in the CVN recently about Mr. Thorgerson buying the Eagle's Nest Hotel and converting it to low-income rooms with a communal kitchen. I thought that was a great template to follow. I thought about where else that could be used around Haynes, and I looked at ways to fund it, and that led me to the housing land, and I spoke to both Lee Heinmiller and Jeff Butcher about that, and given that it's a national historic landmark, there should be Park Service or other federal funding available to refurbish some of that and hopefully convert it into affordable housing for folks. Several other ideas don't fit into 90 seconds.
Okay, does anyone have any thing? Go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah, I think one other thing that the borough could do is sell some land, because I had done a little research, and we haven't sold any large parcels of land since I was mayor. And that was back before the year 2000, since we've had any fairly sizable or any land sales, basically. And the borough at that time, they sold the lots, and then they would finance them and with a small down, like 5% down, which gave incentive to people that don't have a lot of money to buy a piece of property, which is good, and build on it. And so that's one thing. And another thing you can is help developers with the permitting process and stuff to get them down, get them to get their subdivisions done quicker. And so, and one thing the borough might look at too, and is something is, okay, if the borough doesn't want to develop, like do a subdivision, well, why don't you put that certain areas, divide some sections up and sell a section to a developer, let them develop it, then the borough benefits from that. So,
Gabe?
I was going to address Mr. Altman's comment earlier about the ban on yurts. The borough did not ban yurts. What the borough did was they said, if you have a half acre or more, you can build without any restrictions, basically those things, those yurts. But they said anything less than that, you just have to have a conditional use, which, you know, in certain neighborhoods, that was the idea, was to protect maybe Main Street or certain places that shouldn't be used for housing or whatnot. There, you know, it's kind of was just a protection method, and it wasn't to say, oh, we're banning them, we don't like them. It was just trying to figure out a niche and trying to figure out a compromise, because that was, for some reason, that topic came up and it was so polarized, almost as bad as LUTAC doc, and I do not understand why, but it was. And it was, you know, 30 letters of this saying yes and 30 letters saying no. And it was, you know, I was the one who helped draft the compromise. And I thought that was one of the best ways I could do it. I looked through all the town, looked through all the lots, looked through all the different areas that are still not developed. And it was, I thought, a good compromise.
Okay, does anyone else have anything they want to add? Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I had a couple other thoughts. One was thinking about lower income housing that would still be safe and secure. I thought about the borough getting in touch with Habitat for Humanity and see if a pilot program of some kind for northern climates could be brought to Haines, which I think would help alleviate the situation and help provide employment for a number of people around here. Just getting back briefly to what I was saying about the fort and the housing land, there are precedents for that. Fort Warden in the town of Port Townsend has done something very similar to that. As far as you know, tax incentives and relief for developments like Roger Schnabel is doing, I suspect that those lots will probably be fairly expensive and maybe affordable for people who have jobs here, you know, middle income to higher income folks. But there's also a lot of younger people who definitely will not be able to reach that high financially. Thank you.
Okay. If that's all, I think we'll go to audience questions.
I'm going to do that. Really quick.
Quickly, yeah.
There is an affordable housing working group with the borough, I believe, the borough assembly, or through that, and people could get involved in that. I would like to be involved in it.
Okay. Tracy.
Hello, my name is Tracy Harmon. My question is for all of the candidates. What will you do to help existing businesses, current businesses, local businesses, keep their doors open this winter? Not only keep their doors open, but be successful in the winter, or encourage businesses that maybe only operate seasonally to consider expanding operations to year-round?
first.
Who would like to get in first?
I would have to throw it wide open.
That sounded like a long question.
That's a tough question, even for me, and I'm with her.
Who would like to jump on that grenade first?
Yeah.
Jerry, we'll start with you.
Yeah. This is about helping businesses, right, Tracy?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think one of the main things we can do is promote industries, well, not industries, but promote year-round employment here in this valley, because as I stated earlier, in the wintertime here, you see everything closing up. I mean, there might be one restaurant open during the winter, and it's open part-time. So we need things to start happening in the wintertime, and we've got the heli-ski industry, but we need something to carry through from the fall until then. And I can't say exactly what that could be, but it's something that we need to research. We had the mill at one time. When the mill was going, we had things happening year-round. They didn't slow down in the fall. They kept going because people were making money, people were moving, and they were doing things. And I'd like to see that happen again. And I can't say exactly what it would be, but we need a year-round revenue source. And that's just my thought. And it's something that we can look for and look for this community, something that will fit into this community. So, thank you.
Ben?
Yeah, I know your question was for existing businesses, and I think that's something that I would have to do a lot more research on and talk to more people before I had a really succinct answer for you. But I think that a couple of thoughts I had was potentially the borough could incentivize some value-added business programs for some of our raw export products that we have in abundance, like timber and fish. So maybe an example would be a kiln to dry some of the really high-quality wood that gets produced here and often gets used just as rough cut, which is great, but I think that we could probably create more jobs and potentially year-round jobs for something like that. And then also, I think another potential employer that might be year-round is something that Gabe mentioned earlier, was that power, having more power, having more electricity in the Haynesboro is something that we need more of. I totally agree with that. So I think maybe having the borough commission potentially some feasibility studies on wind turbines or on revisiting the idea of opening up another place for hydroelectricity, that could also potentially be a source of year-round revenue.
Gabe?
I live with her and I own a business with her, and I don't know exactly what she's wanting me to say out of this, but I do get that what she's kind of leaning towards, I believe, is having more things available year-round, more economy, like Jerry was stating. How do we do that? It's going to be a combination of everything between, like Ben even mentioned my power thing and other things, and I think as far as borough incentives, it's really hard to continue incentivizing everything. You know, we can't continue to incentivize every single aspect and subsidize every single aspect and then still be able to fund the things that people are demanding to be funded. So that would be part of my answer as far as what you and I can do as business owners. We got to figure out how do we contribute to the community more? How do we hire more employees? How do we expand, you know, and where do we do that? Make more money. More volume, be open more. I think one of the things I saw during the summer was a lot of businesses still weren't open when these ships were here, and that's discouraging for me. You know, it's you know, when you get 2,000 people to come to a town and the only thing open is four or five stores, it's pretty, you know, pretty hard to take. And as Tracy and I can attest, you know, we were one of the only places open 2 weeks ago. We took 60 orders of fish and chips in less than an hour. Because we're the only thing open,
I mean, we're not going to complain. We like the money, but it was just a little bit of an eye-opener.
Jerry, 30 seconds.
Yeah, just one thing that I thought of, and it's been brought up before, but one thing that we should look into as borough and as a chamber is have more conventions here. If we can keep people coming into the community, we can keep these businesses open, and they can go year-round. But until we start bringing more people in the off-season to this community, these businesses are going to continue to close, and it just makes us kind of look like a ghost town. So that and another one is development of our natural resources in a responsible manner, and that will give year-round jobs here.
And then, Eric, I saw your hand up 30 seconds, and we'll move on.
Small value-added lumber business, something I brought up in a meeting with Bill Thomas and John Schnabel about 32 years ago. Didn't really get anywhere, but I still believe in that. Definitely bring more events to town and capitalize on the events that are here. ACT Fest used to bring tons of people here. We haven't done that in a long time. The Alcan 500 could be beefed up. A lot of the foot races and ski races can be brought up. The Bald Eagle Festival, what the huts are doing with the backcountry system could work if the huts are sited carefully and properly. And Heli, a lot of the problems can easily be worked out if we have a facilitated meeting that we almost succeeded at when Deborah Schnabel was manager. And just missed that one.
All right, next question from the audience.
I don't think I need the microphone.
Oh, we do need the microphone.
Okay, I have...
Is it on?
Okay. I have two things. One is a direct question to Eric Holly, or a clarification, and the other I'd like to follow up with just kind of an observation, if that's okay. Eric, are you currently the president of Lynn Canal Conservation?
I am the vice president.
Okay. And are you aware of, did you approve of the recent newsletter that was sent out which encouraged people to address the assembly relative to the proposed agenda item for the Turnagain contract?
I would say I felt like most of what I read was pretty accurate. Yeah.
Okay, so I just wanted to ask you, when I first walked in here and you were giving your introduction, I was so impressed that you said, and I don't remember exactly what you said, but you did say that you didn't think that the that you thought that the members of the administration and the assembly were doing the best they could, and that you didn't attach any agenda to anything that they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't reconcile that with the newsletter that came out with all kinds of accusations about how the assembly and the administration were working behind the scenes and against the Open Meetings Act. And it appeared in the way that it was presented that there was this, you know, orchestrated attempt to fool the public into something that was supportive of, well, specifically the mining industry and the Palmer Project. So I just wanted to point that out, that it was really an inconsistency for me to hear your first statement, which pleased me, and then to know that you approved of that newsletter. So I don't know if you need to have a comment to that. I don't really expect one, but I just wanted to point it out.
I think that there are, I don't want to say the town is divided into two different, you know, factions. I think it's far more complex than that. But to generalize, I think there are people who think that large-scale extractive industry is a good thing And because there are places where that provides long-term employment. There are other places where the extractive industry just pulls out overnight. And I saw that happen in Colorado when I lived there. There are other people who, for lack of a better term, I would say are on the other side, who don't have the vision of a big sort of industrial port and extractive industry. And they came here for other reasons, and they live here for other reasons. And having an ore truck up and down the highway every 3 minutes, that would cause a lot of those people probably to want to pack up and leave. But they wouldn't be able to sell their house because there'd be an ore truck going up and down the highway, you know. I realize I didn't.
Fourth, let's go ahead and move on to.
Are you kidding? Sorry.
I'd kind of like to. I think the question was your statement earlier this evening that you don't imply the worst motives to people. Yet I think what Deborah said was that newsletter did imply that people were working behind the scenes or in the shadows to advance an ore terminal, and she wanted to have you reconcile those two.
Well, I think it's undeniable that, you know, when you listen to the transcript, like from the March 24th Ports and Harbors meeting, that there's been considerable talk about having an ore terminal here, and that's gone on for a long time. And that conversation spelled things out in great detail as far as what the Yukon mining industry wanted to have here and when they wanted to have it by. They wanted to have it by December 2024. It was called a drop-dead date. And Mr. Kells Boland, who was representative of those industries, also spelled out what he wanted in terms of being able to fill a Handymax ore ship. I think it was 3 a month, or I don't remember that exactly, but the numbers add up to one ore truck every 3 minutes up and down the highway. I'm not saying that's an evil vision or you know, that those people are bad, but it's undeniable that that kind of talk has been going on. Read the transcript. Sorry.
Okay, can we move to our next question?
Thank you. I'm Carol Tynan, and my question is, I know that the borough funds HEDC, Haynes Economic Development Corporation, to the amount of approximately $45,000. I think that's very important. And I want to know that given the fact that the Haynes Economic Development Corporation has recently received two large technical service grants for investigating community desires for regenerative economies through year-round recreation, what is your position, or how would you envision the Haynes Borough government assisting in that process? Thank you.
Who would like to address that first? Gabe? Sorry.
I'm kind of curious because I haven't read the MOU or the MOU that we were developing with HEDC yet, or if we even got it completed as of right now. But, you know, I was one of the people that changed my vote during the budget cycle to give HEDC a second chance. And I got a lot of flack from one side of town that didn't think that I should have done that. But I think that I was trying to figure out what can they do. There's different avenues that they can get to that the chamber can't get to, that the borough can't get to, and different avenues and different things that they can reach out to. I'm going to say that, you know, I'm happy they got that money. I would like to see more involvement, though, with their
HEDC throughout the whole community. It seemed like for a while it was a very small group that got benefits from it, and now it seems to be growing, which if it continues to grow, I will continue to help fund it.
Jerry.
I would be in support of funding them as long as they are showing results and they're bringing results into town, bringing money into town. I would totally support them. But before, we didn't see results. And so now I know it's new and it's a good thing that sounds like what they're doing, and I've heard good reports, so I would definitely support it.
I have Bill.
Yeah, I agree with Jerry. Certainly it's called economic development, and if we see economic development, well, then it's worth the borough's effort to give them some money to go after grants, to have programs that will be developing business in our community, bringing money in, bringing people in. But you have to show results.
Yeah, I think results and representation are both really important, that all the economic drivers and industries that are relevant to the community are represented by HEDC as a borough-funded organization, and that results are being shown, but given those things, and then I think that it's a great organization.
Anyone else like to respond? Well, in this state.
Can I ask for clarification on the question? Carol, were you talking about the recent outdoor recreation event that happened last week here, or are you talking about HEDC in general?
No, I'm speaking of two grants. I only know that one is from the Environmental Protection Agency. Mm-hmm. They're both technical support. They're quite extensive. You know, there are a lot of money of consultations and community meetings and a process that I'm not yet familiar with as a citizen. What I'm really looking for is, well, I'm glad you brought up the conference last week, because there were two borough assembly members at the conference, but it didn't feel like there was really borough engagement for whatever reasons. And I think that what I'd like to know is, how is the borough going to support this activity, working towards year-round economic improvement, regenerative economy, you know, things that will help the borough on this question that you're asking about a year-round economy?
I think I'd have to think about that for a while. I appreciate you clarifying the question, but I mean, I like what HEDC has done in the past, because information is useful, and we see where we're strong and where we're not, and where there's room to bolster the winter economy through such things as outdoor recreation. But I'm still not sure that I'm answering your question.
Ben? I think that is exactly the kind of grant that Haynes could benefit enormously from, obviously, as you've pointed out. But if I'm correct, it seems like maybe the fruits of those investigations would be the beginning of the conversation that you're asking about, right? It just seems like maybe having a technical grant that comes up with ideas for generative economy and industry might produce the kind of novel ideas that we are in need of. So in short, I'm just saying I'm also very excited for the grant that you've mentioned.
And I just want to interrupt for a moment to remind everyone that we are airing the 2022 Assembly Candidate Debate on KHNS, Haynes, Skagway, and Cluck One. Any other questions from the audience?
I just was going to clarify something that I was stated earlier. I heard somebody say something about the ports and harbors and the borough, yada, yada. Ports and harbors is an advisory community. They do not have any ability to take action. They can advise to the assembly, and the assembly can take action from there. What happened with that instance is the mayor stepped in and that person's no longer there. So the advisory council did not advise to the borough, to the assembly, and it did not get moved. I'd like to clarify so we can quit talking about it that way. That was it.
Hi, I just wanted to thank you all for being here and answering all these questions tonight. It's been really nice to hear all these opinions being shared and all these ideas. And I realize that this the question I'm going to bring up is not a Haines-specific problem, that there's lots of communities all over the country experiencing this, but I know it seems like every business that I've been to, I work in tourism right now, and just about every tour company is short-staffed. Everybody's short-staffed. I know all the restaurants are short-staffed. It seems like just about every single business is short-staffed. So what can the community, the assembly, do to try and alleviate this kind of huge staffing crisis that seems to be happening right now?
Gabe?
I kind of want to jump on this one right away, and I think the reason being, I think the borough, we just went through renegotiations, and I think if the borough wanted to help create a standard or create like an example, we should have raised our wages even higher for our employees. We should set the borough should set a living standard and a wage standard, and I know it sounds expensive, but in order for the rest of the community to gauge wages, they look at the borough. You know, if you're down at the harbor making $17 an hour as assistant harbor master, well, somebody's going to say, well, I'm not going to pay him $15 an hour to flip burgers. He's making $17 an hour to tie up boats. I think the borough staff, you know, right now we're paying $25 an hour to operate a loader. I'm sorry, but you can't even – most loader operators don't even get out of bed for less than 30, 35. So, I mean, the borough can really help the private sector by setting the bar up a little higher. I think that would help a lot. I mean, it all comes back to housing as well, but affordable housing, I think the borough can be the example and raise wages and set that.
Margaret?
Yeah, I think housing is a really big contributor to this issue. I know personally many people who wanted to come up to work this summer and did not, and that those businesses are short-staffed because the people couldn't find housing. And I was looking, and lots of other people in town were looking, because sometimes it's just hard to connect people with the housing, and there was nothing that people could afford. And I think that keeps, especially in a transitional seasonal type of environment, that makes it really difficult for people to come up here and work in the community.
Oh, yeah. Bill.
I voice the same thing, that housing is probably the biggest problem. And perhaps the borough could do some type of clearinghouse, some type of information list of where housing is available. Apparently it's not always obvious to people who are looking where the housing is available. That's certainly something that would be easy enough to do, I think. And also we need to look at everything we talked about under the housing statements.
Yeah, Jerry.
Yeah, I've got to agree with the housing part of it. It's, you know, it can be a real breaker when it comes to whether somebody wants to come here and work. But also you got to look at transportation. Transportation in Haines is getting fairly expensive. And, well, another thing, you really can't go through the border right now either, which is kind of a holdup, unless you're vaccinated. So those folks that chose not to get vaccinated and stuff can't just go freely back and forth through the border. So, I mean, these are some of the things that maybe the borough can help with. I know the Canadians can come down here. They don't have to be vaxxed. You're never asked at the border if you're vaxxed or not. But if you're going to Canada, you better be. Unless you're going through for essential services and you want to go through all the paperwork. But just the transportation, the housing, and the cost of living here is quite a bit higher. So things like that that need to be worked on to maybe get more folks here for the labor shortage that is happening right at this time. So.
All right. Yeah, Ben.
Yeah, I totally agree with especially what Gabe was saying. It's a dual problem of housing, but also just being able to be paid enough that you can make ends meet. And I think the borough could potentially increase its wages to its staff
And yeah, I think I've got to agree with everybody. It really comes down to housing, especially for, you know, and I know almost all the tour operators were really working everybody hard because they were just short-staffed. And you know, especially for the transient workers that come up here, it's really intimidating to come up here without housing and to just start working and expect that something's going to pop up and come around. So I think that, yeah, having more housing for low and middle income people is gonna solve the problem, because, you know, almost everybody I know is already working two jobs, so it's not a problem of people already in Haines not working enough. That's certainly not the case.
I meant to say affordable housing. Because
any other questions? One more, and I think we'll call it an evening.
Thinking of the new ordinance to give a 10-year tax waiver for large development, I'm just wondering, in the context of the need for affordable housing, do you think it would be advisable to require that developers that get 10-year or more, or even 5-year tax waivers should have a condition where they make a certain number of affordable housing units? And I ask that because it seems like those would go very quickly. Thank you.
Now, Bill.
Carol, that's an excellent idea. I love that idea, that the borough would deed some of this property as perpetual affordable housing. It's certainly something that's done in many other jurisdictions.
Jerry?
Yeah, I think the borough can encourage a developer, but I don't believe that you can make a developer do it. I mean, you'd have to probably have that in code or something, but you could encourage them, or I guess help maybe with them to get grants to do something, but that, I don't think you can require them to do that.
Anyone else? Eric?
In certain places around the United States that are popular to live, like Haines, and I'll use the Jackson, Wyoming, and Wilson, Wyoming area as an example. Property and houses are highly inflated. And a program that seems to work there is that the municipalities have set aside, they have a requirement that a certain number of houses have to be sold at what would be fair market value in other parts of the United States. In other words, they have to be affordable. And then people who are long-term residents or who want to be year-round residents who are not in the higher income brackets can still afford to live there. I need to research that a little bit more, but I think that that could work quite well in Haines.
Bill.
Yeah, the only problem with that suggestion is at first you have affordable housing, and then when it turns the first time, it's not affordable anymore. So there has to be a mechanism where the ones that are set out to be affordable stay affordable.
And Gabe.
Looking at that development, for example, if we would have been way ahead when we first started talking about allowing, or I mean, when he started developing it and showing us the lots, maybe we could have helped incentivize it more to the developer. But as of right now, I don't think there's anything you can do. I think it's going to be self-limiting on its own by what lots are available. I mean, I have looked at the plots, and there are some plots or some lots that aren't going to be as desirable, and they'll probably go a lot lower. And then they have lots that are really high. So I think the borough regulating that, though, it's going to we can suggest it at the beginning, but I don't think getting involved in it now is in the best interest.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if the point is to incentivize developers to develop land, this seems like something that might de-incentivize that same thing, depending mm-hmm. on how it's handled and depending on whether we mandate versus working with the developer to come up with ways to contribute to the community in an important way by providing affordable housing. And I think that there are other ways that the borough can help housing be affordable, like getting involved in the process of figuring out who was going to put utilities on the properties and whether the utilities are going to be consistent and if people are going to be putting their own water and sewer on the property, if that's a responsibility of the developer, if that's something the borough subsidizes. I think that there are prohibitive costs for people that we could maybe help with in another way other than trying to mandate affordable housing by the developer.
All right. Thank you very much. I just want to give all the candidates about 30 seconds. If you have any final comments before we conclude, we'll go ahead and start in reverse order of our introductions. Ben Altmore, would you like to have any final comments?
I just want to say thank you to everybody who came out and asked questions. And, you know, as I've been thinking about these issues more and as I've become more interested in them, I've just really gained so much respect for people who volunteer so much of their time to try to actualize the Haines community into their vision of what they think this town should be. So I just really want to honestly thank all of our public servants.
Margaret Jones.
Yeah. Thank you all for being here, and thank the listeners for listening and giving us an opportunity to convince you or to earn your vote. And I think that while the conflict often associated with a position on the assembly feels daunting to a lot of people, that I'm excited about the potential to dig into the meat and heart of our big issues and seek real solutions that work for real people, that work for you. So thanks for the opportunity.
Eric Holly.
I think there's a lot of creative energy and people around here, and that we can probably figure out how to work together. I didn't hear a lot of people mention CIV and CIA tonight, although there was some mention of them, but I think it would be really good to run a lot of these ideas by those two organizations and get their opinions. And thanks for hosting this forum.
Bill Jerwitz.
Yeah, I'd like to thank everyone who came and everybody who's listening on the radio. I've been very impressed by the ideas I've heard here tonight and very impressed by the capability of all of the candidates who are up here at the table.
Gabe Thomas.
Thanks again, everybody. You all heard us say thank you for coming here. I'm going to say, though, just go out and vote. Instead of just listening and talking about it in town, go vote. You know, you talk to me in the store, as much time as it takes for you to talk to me for 5 minutes of the store, you can go vote. So no excuses this year. Go vote.
Jerry Lapp.
Yeah, I just want to thank you guys for hosting this event and the radio station. We really appreciate it. And for all the folks that are listening in and the folks that turned out here, thank you. And I'll reiterate what Gabe said. Just get out and vote, because it's very important to this community. We want to see this community thrive. We want to see it move forward. And just a couple things for a good assembly person. You need to be a good listener, and you also must have the ability to compromise, because you got to work together. But thank you, guys.
And that concludes our 2022 Assembly Candidate Debate. Thank you very much to the candidates for joining us. Jerry Lapp, Gabe Thomas, Bill Jerwitz, Eric Holly, Margaret Jones, Ben Altmore. And thank you for everyone for joining us and for tuning in to this 2022 Assembly Candidate Debate. A recording of this debate will be posted to khns.org by this weekend. I am Brendan Wilkes with Kyle Clayton and Max Graham. Have a great night and safe travels home.
And you're listening to KHNS, Haines, Skagway, and Clockwan.